the perfect evening for the perfect midsummer evening for an outdoor festival, and that's precisely where we are in downtown East Lansing, broadcasting WKAR's Current State live from East Lansing's Great Lakes Folk Festival. We just heard there from Mae Flanagan and Pamela Garrity, two members of the six-woman group from New York State that will be performing here at the Great Lakes Folk Festival. We'll be hearing from them throughout the course of the hour and chatting them up about their music as well. I'm Mark Bayshore. We're glad you could join us. And we're going to try to give you a nice, diverse taste of what actually happens at the Great Lakes Folk Festival here during the next hour as we come to you live from downtown East Lansing. Indian decorative art. You can learn about that. The Indian decorative body art known as henna. We're going to learn all about that from a pair of local practitioners. This is similar to tattooing, but there are a pair of local practitioners, a mother-daughter team, who traveled the state teaching henna, and we'll be visiting with them shortly. Also, how many of you were aware there is such a thing as Native American cuisine? Indeed, there is, and we'll learn more about that from the owners of Anishinaabe Mijum coming up. Live music, lots more. We remember the 40th anniversary of the only Michigander to become president of the United States. That happened 40 years ago tomorrow, as we remember that moment here this coming hour. Right now, let's get back for more live music, a sample of the Great Lakes Folk Festival. Again, it's Mae Flanagan and Pamela Garrity from Pearl River, New York. This is called The Blacksmith.
A blacksmith courted me 9 months or better. He bravely won my heart, wrote me a letter with his hammer in his hand. He looked quite clever, and if I was with my love, I'd live forever.
Pamela Garrity and Maeve Flanagan, two members of the six-woman Celtic music group from Pearl River, New York. The group is called Gersha. Pamela was on vocals and guitar there, and Maeve plays the fiddle, and we'll visit with the players and learn more about Gersha here coming up. They will be performing several times throughout the course of the weekend here at the Great Lakes Folk Festival in downtown East Lansing, where WKAR's Current State is coming to you live. We're glad you could tune in. One of the attractions here at the GLFF is the Marketplace, which features traditional and folk artists as well as green artists who use repurposed material in their work. Our next pair of guests are practitioners of wearable hand art that has a centuries-old history. Anshu Varma of Okemos teaches the art of henna around the state. She was a recipient of a Michigan Traditional Arts Apprenticeship Award back in 2002 and 2003. She's been a regular participant at the Great Lakes Folk Festival and is here to tell us all about the art of henna. Also joining us, her daughter, Maya Saxena. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you, Mark.
First of all, explain for our listeners what exactly is henna? What is the art of henna that you'll be doing here at the Folk Festival?
Henna is a temporary body art. It is a fun tradition in India, especially for brides at weddings. So there's a henna evening the night before the wedding where the bride gets henna all over her body, mostly in the hands and feet, which is where it dyes a burgundy color. So it's like dressing the bride or its makeup.
And the bridegroom is prohibited, no doubt.
From that party, yes.
Okay. Where and when did you learn the art of henna?
I think art runs in my family. My mother is an artist, and so I think it's in our blood. So the first opportunity I had was when MSU Museum contacted me to do henna at the Great Lakes Folk Festival way back in 2002. So that's how long I've been doing this. And once they got me started, it was hard to stop because I just love doing henna, and all kids, teenagers, adults alike just love wearing the art on their hands.
And you've been doing it for about that long, about a dozen years.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
What is there anything that it is meant to convey? Is there some religious or spiritual symbolism involved?
I think
in this?
There is a huge cultural and traditional and auspicious symbolism attached to it because it's for brides and it's decorative, and the darker the color of the henna on your hands, the more your husband's going to love you. So it's very important.
What? Tell us about the brown ink. This is a rust-colored ink.
Yes.
That you use.
Yes. So we all use all natural ingredients. Henna is actually a leaf. It's powdered, crushed, and mixed with eucalyptus oil and brewed black tea to make a paste. And then I make applicators to fill it with, and then use that applicator to apply a lacy pattern on the hand.
Do you get the occasional foot person?
Oh,
anybody come up to take their shoe and sock off and say, I really want it on the floor?
If it doesn't smell, we will attempt. We've done a pregnant belly. We've done arms.
Well, so. People get loose at the festival. You never know what they're gonna run by you, I suppose. Is it primarily, traditionally, it's primarily a marriage? A marriage wedding ceremony thing?
Yes,
or is it, does it expand? Is it used on other occasions?
It's used at festivals also, but it's primarily a bridal decoration.
And it's primarily a female thing. Do men ever have?
There are men patterns, and it's, since it's auspicious, they get a little sun or something very masculine, you know, nothing lacy.
We're talking to Anshu Varma of Okemos and her daughter Maya Saxena, who are both practitioners of the Indian art of henna art, kind of like a tattoo, and they'll be demonstrating this here at the Great Lakes Folk Festival in downtown East Lansing.
Mark, actually, I invite everyone to come and get a little sample. Our tent is right by Harper's, and we take donations, which we contribute back to the festival for next year. And that's how we operate. It's a fundraising for the museum.
Okay. One other question. What is it that makes you want to share this art with people who may not have a cultural connection with India?
That's a very, very good question. I started this way back when my daughter was 11. And for 11 kids at her party, birthday party, I had to do henna. And so I decided, none of this. I'm going to teach you how to do it. So you don't, I'm not doing this incessantly all day, all night.
Maya Saxena, let's turn the microphone over to you. How often do you actually practice this?
As often as I possibly can.
Okay.
The festival is our biggest event of the year. And I enjoy it because I love to put henna on other people, and everybody enjoys it, and you just to see a smile on their face is great. And I like to henna myself too sometimes, so it's a lot of fun.
How long does the image last on the skin?
Depending on how many times you wash your hands, about 7 to 10 days, and it kind of just gradually fades away as the first layer of your skin, you know, as the more you wash your hands, your skin cells renew themselves, and so it fades away gradually.
Are you here every day of the Great Lakes Folk Festival then?
We are here Saturday and Sunday for most of the day.
Saturday and Sunday as well. We want to thank both of you very much for joining us here. Anshu Varma and her daughter Maya Saxena, who are practitioners of the Indian art known as henna. And we encourage you to stop by and check out what they have to offer here. They're set up right next to Harper's, correct?
Thank you so much, Mark. Yes, we welcome everyone to come and try a little bit.
Anshu was also a recipient, we'll point out again, of a Michigan Traditional Arts Apprenticeship Award in 2002 and 2003, and she teaches the art of henna around the state along with her daughter, Maya. Thanks for joining us very much. It's Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. From the Great Lakes Folk Festival in downtown East Lansing, the Great Lakes Folk Festival is one of the largest art celebrations in the Midwest. One of the highlights of the festival is the presentation of the Michigan Traditional Arts Program Awards, commonly known as the Heritage Awards. And Current State's Kevin Lavery is here to tell. Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Mark. This year, the Heritage Awards honor two Michiganders and a native Texan who made a brief but historic trip to Michigan. They are fiddle player Danny Johnston, Carl Byarski, who is a folk documentarian who turns 98 years old this year, and Alan Lomax, the noted ethnomusicologist who traveled across the state in 1938, gathering field recordings from people of all kinds of backgrounds. I spoke with Dr. Lori Summers about the awards. She is a research associate with the Michigan State University Museum, which sponsors the awards, and she explained what the Heritage Awards are all about.
The idea is that there are people who are carrying on important traditions in their families and their communities that need to be recognized. And these are individuals that can be nominated by anyone who has somebody that they feel is a community treasure for their community.
There are three awardees this year, one of whom is a fiddler, a folk musician. The other two are music documentarians. One of those two is being awarded posthumously. Let's first talk about Danny Johnston. He is a fiddler from Harbor Springs, and he's one of the co-founders of a group called the Cedar Swamp Boys. What brought Danny Johnston's name to the top of this list?
We have a long tradition of honoring fiddlers as one of the types of traditional musicians that are recognized. There's a whole range of genres, but fiddlers have certainly been prominent among the honorees over the years of the Michigan Heritage Awards. Danny is a longtime fiddler and entertainer of his community. He's been playing for decades in northern Michigan, both in around his home area, traveling some, and also on the small island of Beaver Island, where they always have loved a good fiddler, and Danny's been playing there for a number of years. So he's being honored for continuing the regional tradition and the local tradition of fiddling from his area, but also perhaps as important in the criteria for these awards, he's being nominated and awarded for being an encourager of other fiddlers, for mentoring younger fiddlers, for sharing tunes that he knows from his vast repertoire. And in fact, two of the younger fiddlers who will be performing at this year's Great Lakes Folk Festival, Trey McMackin and Ruby Johns, both young, really outstanding Michigan fiddlers, are people that Danny has encouraged to be fiddlers and share tunes and encourage them in their work.
Let's listen to a clip now that features Danny Johnston with the Cedar Swamp Boys. This is a piece entitled Maple Sugar. Laura, you touched a little bit upon this. What really makes Danny Johnston a good representative of the fiddling traditions that are found in his part of the state, in the northern Lower Peninsula?
Well, one, obviously, you have to be someone who can play and play in tune and have a good repertoire of tunes. And one of the things, this tune, Maple Sugar, a Canadian tune, is part of Danny's repertoire. I think what in part makes a good fiddler is that you're a good entertainer. You're valued and respected by your cultural community. You can hear now in this recording, perhaps by the acoustics and the sound quality, this was a live recording actually made in 1989, a field recording by Jim Leary, who's now at the University of Wisconsin. But you get the flavor of the community enjoying dancing. I mean, a good fiddler has to be able to play the dance tunes that his audience is interested in dancing to. So with his group that he was with for many years, and it's just about defunct with the passing on of sort of the key members of the Cedar Swamp Boys, and Danny's now playing with some other people, but he played these French-Canadian tunes, he'd play Michigan Square Dance tunes, he'd played a bunch of Polish tunes. So his repertoire really reflects the cultural makeup of his community and his audience, and that's always been the sign of a good fiddler, to keep the dancing going and play tunes that your audience and your community enjoys dancing to.
The next Heritage Award winner is Carl Byarski. He is also a musician, but he is being honored for his work in documenting folk music across the state. He's a native of the Thumb region. He's been recording music for about 60 years, and I read that he has a collection that includes something like 650 reel-to-reel tapes and about 1,000 cassettes. That's a lot of music to be documenting over 60-plus years.
It's really a remarkable collection, and the basis of our knowledge really about the rich repertoire of folk music in this country is largely due to the work of what we'd call amateur local collectors like Carl, who've been collecting faithfully the music that is found around him in the Thumb region and elsewhere in Michigan, but particularly the strength of his collection is the Thumb. And really what Carl has done is create a musical ethnography, if you will, recording musicians on location in a radio show that he had for a period of time, in a studio in his basement, and also not just music, but did some oral histories with some of the members of his community over period of time, and recorded a number of things at the Polish Catholic Church that he was a part of. So it's a really rich array of material. There are some fiddlers where you'll find recordings of them elsewhere, and some where this is really the only recordings of these fiddlers that likely exist. And I don't think anybody else has a collection of the scope and richness.
This is a recording Carl Byarski made of fiddler Ford Stein from Bad Axe. He was born in 1910, so this is indicative of the music of Michigan's Thumb region. Do we know much about Ford Stein himself as a musician?
Well, we know that he's one heck of a fiddler, and we know that he was born and raised in Bad Axe and then later moved to Macomb County in St. Clair Shores. This has been an ongoing effort. It's still going on. It's a labor of love of Carl, who, of course, at 98 isn't able to trot around and but is able to give the full richness that he can recall with his amazing memory of what he remembers about these musicians and where he recorded them.
The last honoree this year is arguably the most well-known of the three. It's being awarded posthumously to Alan Lomax. And like Carl Byarski, he was also an ethnomusicologist. Back in 1938, he embarked on a now famous journey through the state of Michigan on a mission from the Library of Congress.
Well, Alan Lomax, at the time he came to Michigan, this was his first and only collecting trip in our state. And he was a young 23-year-old assistant in charge, I love that title, assistant in charge, of at the what was then called the Archive of Folk Song at the Library of Congress. He was the first to record Woody Guthrie and Muddy Waters and a number of other now sort of legendary figures. But along with that, there's a huge number of what Alan would have called ordinary Americans who were, you know, continuing the music of their communities. So he came to Michigan as part of this effort to broaden the scope of the recordings at the Library of Congress. He actually was most interested when he came in finding music of ballads. This was an area in the 1930s, sort of the golden age of ballad collecting in the U.S. I don't think he was really prepared for the number of languages that he encountered, and again, this tremendous richness of European immigrant musics that had been brought to Michigan and then was mingling and creating new sounds in all sorts of interesting ways. And I think the clip that you have with lyrics in English and French is one indication of this kind of new world mixing in Michigan that he encountered during his trip.
Absolutely. And let's hear that clip now. October 1938, Alan Lomax went to Barriga in the Upper Peninsula. It's a little bit west of Marquette. And he met some French-speaking citizens there, some French singers, Elixia and Mose Belair. And here is Elixia Belair singing, "I Went to Marquette." And as you say, she's alternating between French and English.
I went to Marquette, à m'accompagner de sur ma bras. On my way, j'ai rencontré la fille de l'avocat. Oh, I love you, un homme meilleur. Oh, I love you, un homme mais pas. I bought some apples, puis c'est une arapa. I bought a dozen, pour pas vous les faire. Oh, I love you, un homme meilleur. Oh, I love you, un homme mais pas. I bought some apples, puis c'est une arapa. I bought a dozen, pour pas vous les faire. Oh, I love you, un homme meilleur. Oh, I love you, un homme mais pas. I went upstairs, le bonhomme était pas là. I went downstairs, le bonhomme était là. Oh, I love you, un homme meilleur. Oh, I love you, un homme mais pas. I went downstairs, le bonhomme était là.
You know, Lori, there is really something romantic about the notion of Alan Lomax traveling through the backwoods of northern Michigan during the Depression, meeting and lodging with local folks there, learning their traditions. It's got a very Steinbeckian quality, if that's the word for it.
It does. I think the reality was is that if you look at the telegrams and letters that he sent back to his boss at the Library of Congress, he was constantly asking for money. This expedition was done on a shoestring. I mean, and here was this young man who had was living at times out of the back of his car, would say, "Send money, I'm not eating," or, you know, some of his money, a lot of his money actually was having to be spent on beer for people that were going to sing for him, especially in Beaver Island with all the Irish that are there and in the UP. So,
well, you had to go with the currency you had at the time, correct?
Exactly.
Especially in the 30s.
Exactly. One of the things, in addition to this ethnic diversity that he added to the first time to the Library of Congress collection, was that this was the first time that a sound recording device had been used in Michigan to record traditional music. So we have, dating from the 30s, some of the first field recordings of Michigan folk music, and they're a real treasure.
Dr. Lori Summers is a research associate with the MSU Museum, which is sponsoring the Michigan Traditional Arts Program Heritage Awards. They will be awarded Sunday afternoon at the Great Lakes Folk Festival in East Lansing. And again, this year's honorees are Danny Johnston, Carl Byarski, and Alan Lomax. Lori, it's been a pleasure exploring this great American genre with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
It's Current State on WKAR, broadcasting live from downtown East Lansing on evening number one of the weekend-long Great Lakes Folk Festival here in East Lansing. Our live music this hour provided by Mae Flanagan and Pamela Garrity of the six-woman Celtic music group from New York, Gersha. Let's hear more from Maeve and Pamela. From the Great Lakes Folk Festival, coming to you live from downtown East Lansing, Maeve Flanagan and Pamela Garrity of Gersha from New York State. They'll be performing here all weekend long at the Great Lakes Folk Festival. And we will talk with the players here in just a few minutes here on WKAR. Again, live from downtown East Lansing from the Great Lakes Folk Festival, I'm Mark Bayshore. We'll point out, in case you haven't heard already, that just a day after the Detroit Free Press reported on his expense account, Michigan State Housing Development Authority Executive Director Scott Woosley has resigned his post. The Free Press uncovered a trail of receipts dating back to 2012 that show Woosley spent tens of thousands of dollars on luxury hotels and fine dining. Woosley himself responded by asking the Michigan Department of Treasury to audit his reimbursements. In a written statement, Mr. Woosley says, in part, "I don't want recent news reports to be a distraction from the transformative work that's happening at MISHTA and across the state." State Treasurer Kevin Clinton is recommending that MISHTA's Board of Directors appoint Deputy State Treasurer Wayne Workman as Acting Executive Director of MISHTA at its next meeting. The Great Lakes Folk Festival isn't just about music and crafts. Traditional food is a mainstay of the event as well. Long before Europeans arrived in Michigan in the 1600s, the Anishinaabe people created their own cuisine, and the husband and wife team of Robin and Eva Menefee have a booth here that features the foods of the Anishinaabe, and Eva Menefee joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you very much, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
Your booth is called Anishinaabe Mijum. Tell us a little bit about the Anishinaabe people.
Well, the Anishinaabe people are the people of the Great Lakes, the Ottawa, the Chippewa, and the Potawatomi, and they've lived here for as long as we say that this land was. My husband belongs to the Grand Traverse Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians, so we go to powwows and festivals all throughout the state of Michigan.
And you obviously are in the food business. What foods do you serve here?
Well, here at the festival and out of our food trailer, that's called Anishinaabe Mijum, which means first people, and Mijum means food, so things we eat. We serve buffalo burgers. We have different kinds of soup, wild rice soup, corn soup, buffalo chili, and of course, the main meal of any powwow is our fried bread that we make, and you can put butter, honey, cinnamon sugar, you can put strawberries on it if you want. It's all really good.
And you brought a bit of all of that stuff here for me to indulge in.
Absolutely.
Which is greatly, me and everybody else here from and say it appreciated here. So we'll be sampling this throughout the rest of the evening. Root vegetables play a pretty key role in Anishinaabe cuisine, correct?
Yes, they do, because root vegetables were things that the Anishinaabe people could grow and they would last for a very, very long time. I belong to the Oneida tribe, and we actually lived in a longhouse, and so we would actually dig like a root cellar in our homes, because once the vegetables would grow, we would actually have them save them for all winter long. So in my wild rice soup, we have the root vegetables. We have onions, and we have carrots, and we have rutabagas that are in there that we cut up, and so that that's kind of a staple, because root vegetables last a long time.
How authentic is this food here then that you brought with us?
Well,
or brought with you here?
What
today?
I brought with me, probably pretty authentic. The fried bread really happened when Native Americans were moved from their traditional homelands and moved to reservations. They were given commodities of lard and flour, and they came up with a fried bread recipe. When you fry up some dough, that's what you get. But the soup I make, our corn soup, is actually the colored Indian corn that you see at the holidays. A lot of people don't think you can eat it, but you can. We process that. It takes about 4 hours to cook until the kernels pop open, and then you can eat that soup. Our wild rice soup has the root vegetables, but it has wild rice. And wild rice, they grow it in Wisconsin and northern Michigan, in Minnesota. And that's another staple of the Indian people of this area. And wild rice, while it's called wild rice, it's not really rice, it's really a grass. But it's ricing thing that people do in the spring. After the rice grows in the market areas, they hit the rice, and the rice falls out of the stalks into the boats. And so people still do the rice today.
Shall we, what do you want to recommend here? You brought three cups of soup or stew here.
I did, and so I'd like to try out rice soup, because that's my recipe, and I think it's the best one. So.
It is Eva Menefee's recipe of rice soup. We're going to sample just a little bit of it here. That rocks.
I'm glad you like it.
That rocks.
Thank you.
That's real good, Eva.
Thank you.
How do you season? What seasonings tend to get used in Anishinaabe cuisine?
Well, usually, salt and pepper, because that's what we have today. But usually the seasoning comes from the vegetables. So in my rice soup, for example, a rutabaga, people don't think about eating a rutabaga, but a rutabaga is really has a strong flavor. And so when you cook it in the soup, that's what really starts seasoning the broth. The rice itself has a lot of, is very healthy for you, but does it really have a taste? I don't think it does, but having it in the vegetables makes the rice soak up the flavor, and I think that makes a difference.
And the rutabaga probably packs a punch too.
Exactly.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
Okay. How has Anishinaabe cuisine contributed to global culture? Can you point to that?
Yep. There's probably a lot of people don't know about this, but when you think about a tomato, what would Italian food be without a tomato, right? Well, you know, before Christopher Columbus came to the United or world, he didn't know what a tomato was. Well, he came and he found a tomato and took it back to Italy, and so now it's a really standard part of their cuisine. When we think about the potato and the things that happened in Ireland, you know, the potato, a root vegetable, was grown here in North America long before it found its way to Europe. So there's a lot of different kinds of foods that we have here that have been gone over back the other way to the other continents for people to eat.
Our guest here on Current State, Eva Menefee, who is offering us up here some Anishinaabe cuisine, Native American cuisine, which you can sample here at the Great Lakes Folk Festival in downtown East Lansing. It's Anishinaabe Mijum is the name of your business. You just have the trailer, correct?
That's okay. Right. We just have the trailer. We primarily go to Indian powwows and Indian festivals, but we've been coming here to the Great Lakes Folk Festival for years, ever since it was set up by the Smithsonian. We were invited in those first few years we came, and we just come back ever since. We're from Lansing, so this is our home, so we love coming here and seeing all our friends that come down and eat an Indian taco or buffalo burger.
An Indian taco?
Yeah, our Indian taco. Our Indian taco is actually our fried bread. We put seasoned hamburger, lettuce, cheese, and tomato, but it's on our fried bread, so just about all of the things that we offer has something to do with fried bread, because you would find some fried bread in everybody in every Indian's house.
Let me, you know what? We've got the time. You went to the trouble of bringing all this food. Could I try the?
Try the buffalo chili.
The buffalo chili. We're gonna try some Anishinaabe medium buffalo chili here. Well, I don't want a little meat in there.
This is David Kleiner, maestro. Give it up.
Delightful.
Glad
very nice.
Like
well
it.
Done.
Thank you.
Well done, Eva.
Thank you.
What do you think? What do you think your patrons come away with when they visit your booth?
Well, hopefully.
What do they tend to say?
Well, they hopefully leave with a full stomach and they got their money's worth. That I like. But I think a lot of times people don't even think about trying some Native American food. You know, people eat Native American food every day. I mean, you eat a corn.
They don't realize
it. They don't realize it.
Yeah.
You eat corn. If it wasn't for natives, we wouldn't have corn on the cob. We wouldn't have popcorn. We wouldn't have all of those things that people eat every day. A turkey. You wouldn't think about eating a turkey, right? But turkey is a Native American food. Think of all of the things that you eat at your Thanksgiving dinner. Probably most of the stuff, unless you have a regional family recipe that somebody makes, is probably something you would find on a Native American feast.
How aware of your Anishinaabe traditions and history and culture did you grow up with? Were you made aware of this at a young age, or was it really as you got older?
No, it really was from at the time I was young. I can remember when I was little, and it's really funny that the business, our Anishinaabe Mijum, actually is my husband's family's business. But when I was growing up, my dad would always say, if you want to go on a vacation, we have to make our fried bread booth. So we would go and pack up our family. There's five kids in my family. We'd all pack up our stuff. We'd go to a powwow. We'd set up our fried bread booth, hope for a really good weekend, because that means we could go on a bigger vacation. So I've been interested in food my whole life and having different kinds of foods that I explore with my family. My children are very funny because they know that mom always says, you have to try something new. And you know what? People don't think about trying Native American food. So while you're here at the Folk Festival, I hope that your listeners will come down and try a Native American food.
I think you probably just picked up a few customers.
I hope
safely.
So.
Remind us again, the Anishinaabe, the tribes under the umbrella of Anishinaabe.
Yep, the Anishinaabe tribes are the Ottawas, the Chippewas, and the Potawatomis. And those are the people of the Three Fires. Those are the people that live in really the state of Michigan all over.
And are you planning to, would you like to expand this? I mean, it's a modest operation. Would you like to be
maybe
more active?
Someday, but like I tell folks, I have a day job, so I have my other job that I do during the week. But we start our festival season in May, and we'll go through October. So we go all over the state of Michigan. So.
You've got kids who are involved in this as well, just the same way it was passed on to you?
Just the same way it was passed on to me. My daughter, she goes to school in Minnesota, so she got lucked out. My son just graduated, and he's in the booth working, and so he's still here.
Family affair.
It's a family affair. I can remember when the kids were small, this was the one thing they always learned math really quick. I can remember my daughter sitting in the window selling thumb, and people didn't want to give her money, but she could make change with the best of them.
Eva Menifee has a booth here, along with her husband Robin, a booth at the Great Lakes Folk Festival that features the foods of the Anishinaabe, a Native American cuisine. Eva, best of luck, and many thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's Current States on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore, live from the Great Lakes Folk Festival. 40 years ago today, President Richard Nixon made this historic announcement.
I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow. Vice President Ford will be sworn in as president at that hour in this office.
The Watergate scandal prompted Nixon to resign in disgrace, the first and only American president ever to step down from office. Michigander Gerald Ford took the oath of office the next day to become the 38th president of the United States.
And when Ford took office, he was faced not with just the lingering effects of Watergate and the despondency of this country over everything that had happened in our nation's highest office. But he also faced an ongoing Cold War, an economic situation with inflation, with a recession going on at the same time, with the lingering effects of the Vietnam conflict. And the biggest thing that was still hanging over our country's head was what's going to happen to Richard Nixon, even after he had resigned.
Right. And barely a month after Gerald Ford took office, he issued that famous presidential pardon of Richard Nixon. Something that I think a lot of people don't know is that he granted conditional amnesty for some people who had dodged the draft and had evaded the Vietnam War and had gone to Canada. I think that part tends to get dwarfed by the overpowering image of a presidential pardon.
Yes. You know, I think Ford saw the country's biggest need in those early days was the need to heal, both the situation with the Vietnam draft resistors as well as Richard Nixon. Those things needed to be put at rest. If he had not pardoned Richard Nixon that early in 1974, we would have been watching a former president of the United States on trial during the biggest celebration this country has ever had, and that was the bicentennial. So in August of 1974, we were about as down on ourselves as I remember as an American. However, the time we all felt the best about ourselves was in 1976 when we're celebrating our bicentennial. It was a wonderful time, and we were all proud to wear red, white, and blue. I've always said there's a reason why Rocky, the film, could have won the Best Picture Award in 1976, but in 1975, there was no way that Rocky would have won Best Picture. It was only 1976 when, you know, the famous line in there where the promoter says, "Rocky, do you believe in the American dream?"
"Rocky, do you believe that America is the land of opportunity?"
"Yeah."
We just felt so good about ourselves, and that wouldn't have happened if we had a former president still on trial.
When people come to Grand Rapids and tour the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum, do you ever have the privilege of seeing a group of people come in and their perception is he pardoned Nixon, and that's what's in their mind in the beginning, but when they end the tour, they have a different perspective?
They do. And I've gotten letters and I've gotten comments and people have stopped me out in the lobby to say, you know, I never thought I'd enjoy this museum, but you know, you have so much information here. I'm so glad, and I'm going to bring so many other people back because, you know, we treat President Ford the way he wanted to be treated, and that's honestly. We show him with his warts, and we show him in his shining moments. There were a lot of major events during his 895 days in office, you know, the pardon, the clemency for draft resistors. You know, Mrs. Ford's breast cancer and her openness about that really opened up the White House, where it had been pretty much a bunker mentality during the later years of the Nixon administration. Now it was open and free, accessible to the press and to the American people. So we also, you know, ended the Vietnam conflict or our total involvement in Vietnam with the fall of Saigon. So there were plenty of things that happened during the Ford administration. And, you know, every president has a legacy, and President Ford's legacy is something that he and his family and all of us in Michigan ought to be proud of.
Jim Kratzis is the deputy director of the Gerald R. Ford Presidential Museum in Grand Rapids. And we are talking about the 40th anniversary of the very unique inauguration of Gerald Ford, the 38th president of the United States, on August 9th, 1974. Mr. Kratzis, thank you for shedding light on this great Michigander and this unique man.
Well, thank you for having me.
For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
Warren State on 90.5 WKAR. We are coming to you live here on Friday evening from downtown East Lansing and the annual Great Lakes Folk Festival. It is night number one. Throughout the course of the hour, we've been serenaded here by a couple of musicians, specialists in traditional Irish music. They are members of the band Gersha, and we're talking about Maeve Flanagan and Pam Garrity. Welcome back to Current State.
Thank you for having us.
Where are you? You're from Pearl River, New York. Where is that?
Yes, that is in Rockland County in New York.
It's
about 35 to 40 minutes outside of New York City. It is a very, very Irish town.
And I understand there's a lot of, I read your bios online, there's a fair amount of Irish music activity in the Catskills. Is that right?
Yes, we've been going to the Catskills since about the age of at least seven, I'd say. That's when I started Irish music. I know Maeve started a bit earlier. Her mom has been a teacher for many years, and her mom actually teaches at the Irish Arts Week up in the Catskills. There are a couple of weeks that feature Irish music up in the Catskills in East Durham, New York. So that's actually where our band formed about 9 years ago now. It's very special to us.
Do you do many festivals like this?
We do, yes. We have never done a festival that is not, I guess, totally Irish. So this is our first kind of folk festival. But we're very excited to be here.
And Maeve, you're the fiddle player, and yes. Pamela plays a beautiful Tachamine here guitar. Do you work any other instruments into the act?
Yes, we have banjo, we have accordion, we have bowron, which is an Irish frame drum. My sister plays that.
Oh, yeah.
We have piano, we have three of the girls sing, so they do lovely harmonies. They won't allow me to sing, but I'm still trying to persuade them.
I think it's better off that way, guys.
I play the tin whistle, and what else do we have? I think that might be it. And some dancing. My sister dances. Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yes. Dancing is a part of it.
Yep. We all danced growing up, but I think it's better off that we leave me out of the mix.
Yes. Pamela is not the best dancer.
Okay.
We played with the Elders one time. They're a great Irish band from Kansas City. And we played with them one time, and they asked us to dance. And needless to say, they will never be asking Pamela to dance again.
Everybody's got an Achilles heel in this band. So it's just, you can do anything you want. Except this right here. Don't even think about doing that. You guys have been together. Some of your members have been together. You've played since childhood. Have you two played since you were really young?
Yes. Then? Our parents grew up together in the Bronx. My mom was actually in the original Cherish the Ladies 1 million years ago. I can say that because she's in Ireland right now, so I don't think she's able to listen to this.
She might be listening online.
But my dad plays as well. I know that he's listening right now. He plays the fiddle and concertina.
And my dad's from Galway, a really rich area in Irish music in Ireland. And my mom grew up playing music in the Bronx as well. So kind of a bunch of our parents grew up playing music together, then migrated to Pearl River, New York, where we really took off with music at a young age.
Do you describe it all as traditional as what you played, or do you work more contemporary sounds into the band?
We do a lot of traditional, but we also we talk about how we Gershify some songs, which is when we kind of bring in some modern elements, I guess you would say. We cater to the crowd sometimes, so if we're playing to more of a rowdy, younger crowd, we'll play some, you know, Avicii. We do some Van Morrison, some Rod Stewart now and then, so.
Maeve Flanagan and Pamela Garrity, members of Gersha, are our guests here on WKAR's Current State. They will be performing along with their four other colleagues here throughout the weekend at the Great Lakes Folk Festival. Gersha means what, Pamela?
It means young girls in Northern Irish slang. So in the north of Ireland, there's a couple of the girls that their parents are from the north of Ireland. So my cousin's grandma from the county Armagh used to say, good on you, Gersha, like good girl. So it's kind of a slang word. It's not proper Irish, but we adapted it from that.
This is one serious family affair, I can tell.
Yes, it is.
Now, have you recorded?
We have three CDs. The first one we came out with when the majority of us were still in high school. And that's self-titled. And then we have Our second one we came out with probably 5 years ago. It's called A Sweeter Place. And we just did a new 5-track EP called Just a Thought.
And where can people find out more about your music online?
We are going to be playing here all weekend. We're going to be selling our CDs. We're also on iTunes and Facebook. And yeah, you can reach out to us there.
Our website is also www.girsamusic.com. So GIRSAmusic.com.
Pamela Garrity and Maeve Flanagan of the group Gersha. We're going to let Maeve retake her position and get her fiddle ready to play us out here from the Great Lakes Folk Festival in downtown East Lansing. It's been great to have you aboard for our live broadcast tonight from the Great Lakes Folk Festival. Monday on Current State, Lansing City Council President A-Lynn Bowles will speak to me about the Board of Water and Light's rate hike and board expansion. We'll also discuss the rise of women in Michigan's craft beer industry. That and more Monday on Current State. Let's listen more now to Maeve and Pamela of Gersha. You've been listening to Current State on WKAR from the Great Lakes Folk Festival in East Lansing. Have a wonderful evening.